You are now listening to the Invited Podcast with Cedric Harris and Tia McClain. You've officially been invited.
On today's episode of the Invited Podcast, we have Patrick Varnado, also known as Big Nardo. So I have to say both names because he'll be talking about his life as an artist, but also as a businessman. So by trade, Patrick is a business analyst with a degree in computer science, but his true passion and drive lies in music and media. He created his own media company entitled 3N, 3Out Media, which currently hosts multiple artists. I'm excited to share your story with our listeners, so let's get into it.
Let's do it. Thank you for that great introduction.
Of course. Thank you for joining us, Patrick.
Sure. Yeah, so Patrick, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? And a little bit about your background and upbringing.
Okay. From Vicksburg, Mississippi, small town in Mississippi. Small southern town upbringing, really big in the church, really big on family. Grew up, it was me and my mom, my sister mostly. Go to your dad's house for the summer, you know. I don't really know how to give my story of my upbringing. I feel like it was a pretty normal upbringing for me, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of people around me did the same things, went through the same kind of upbringing. So.
Gotcha. So what was like Mississippi like? Because I've never been. And so in my head, whenever I think of Mississippi, I think of dirt roads, think of country, think of small towns. Was it really like that?
And so, I'm with you. So, and that helps me answer the question a little bit better. Because when I think of Mississippi, I think of like home. But not everybody understands Mississippi that way. So I feel like there's two sides of Mississippi. Mm-hmm. You have the more urban side of Mississippi. And that's like your main cities. Like Jackson, that's our capital. Madison. Just like cities around Jackson. Cities in the on the coast, like in Biloxi and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's like our more urban side. You have your malls, you have your shopping centers, you have movie theaters, skating rink, all the attractions and everything. And then you get to the more country, the more rural side of things. And then it's like the closest store is 30, 40 minutes away.
Gotcha.
You may only have your family as your neighbors. You probably grow up with the same 15, 20 people. You go through the same school and everybody knows each other from start to finish, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like it's two sides of Mississippi. And I feel like I got to see both of them just in my upbringing because Vicksburg is more on the urban side of Mississippi. And where my dad's people are from, Magnolia, Mississippi, is more on the rural side of things.
Gotcha. So what kind of influenced like your decision making, like from your early teens going to your higher education years? Yeah. What really influenced you to pursue higher education, and why did you pick Alcorn?
Alcorn.
It's Alcorn, and any Alcorn alumni are gonna hear that and they're like, yeah, you gotta correct them. And it's not even a personal thing, it's just like anytime you hear Alcorn, it's like, you know, it's all core. It's all good.
But, okay, know. Okay. So, learn something new.
Yeah, Alcorn State University. So my mom, my dad, my uncle, my grandfather, my grandmother, and then probably like countless cousins. Everybody in my family went to Alcorn. So,
sheesh.
You know, so from my mom's point of view, it was like a shoe-in. For me, early high school, like, I was always a smart kid. I was always like in advanced classes, did well in school. Had good grades, played sports and everything. And so I took the ACT. I made a decent score on the ACT, and I applied for Mississippi State University because that's the only school we hear about. Like, that's the best school in the state. You'll have, like, your civil engineers come to the class and talk. And so when you see that, it's like, well, they look like they're making money, and they're able to stay at Mississippi. They're able to do their thing, and they all went to Mississippi State. So that's what I wanted to pursue. So I was like, I'm going to be a civil engineer, go to Mississippi State. So I took the ACT. Made a good score, applied to Mississippi State, and I didn't get accepted with a scholarship. And so, like, that kind of peed me off. So I was like, well, I don't really too much care what I do because, I mean, school wasn't ever anything that we really saw a lot of people do.
Right.
So I didn't really have any plans. Like, I was just taking things day by day. And my mom was like, nah, that's not how you going to live. And she, every day, she made me put in a application to a school somewhere. And I think I applied to, like, Southern Miss, Jackson State, Ole Miss. I didn't even want to go there, but I applied because my mom made me.
Mm-hmm.
Like countless other schools. And Alcorn ended up giving me like a full ride on academic, and then I got to play football as well because we knew some of the coaches. So I got like a preferred walk-on status.
I don't feel like I knew you had a full ride scholarship.
Yeah, for sure. I was supposed to get a full ride to Mississippi State, but they ain't give me the money. So that's why I never really cared for them after that. But yeah, I mean, I wish I would have planned better for school, though.
In what ways?
Like, I don't know. I feel like I kind of just jumped in it. I didn't really know too much about what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I didn't really have like a set end goal. I just knew that I wanted to make money. And I mean, at the end of the day, that's a decent goal to have. So I'm not mad at that. But I could have, you know, you could take different routes to get to it. Mm-hmm. But so I chose, again, like I said, I wanted to do civil engineering. But I ended up going into computer science because Alcorn didn't have an engineering class, like an engineering school.
Gotcha.
So like they had engineering tech, but that's, if anybody listening think about engineering tech, that means you have to work under an engineer. And you're going to be a pay grade under him, and you're going to have to always be like subservient to him. So, me and Mom's research, and they said computer science is probably one of the better majors there at Alcorn. So end up going into that. Man, you know, it was a decent little 4 years of that. I didn't realize how much math and stuff would be involved in it, but I was always good with math, so it wasn't too bad.
That's what I was gonna ask you actually. As far as like the coursework, mm-hmm. everyone I know that's in computer science or has done that degree always complains about the work.
Yeah.
Day in and day out, they talk about how hard it is, yeah. how everyone in their class on all the tests always gets D's, and like that's like the highest. What influenced you, or what kept you going to like stick with it, although it may have been difficult? And like you said, you didn't even realize how much went into it initially.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like anything I got myself into, I was gonna see it to the end, and so I mean, just getting that degree was a part of it. Like I joke about it all the time. Like I wasn't the smartest person in the class. Like I do some stuff, but you also find ways around not knowing things in school. And that's a part of life. So if you can master that at school, you can master that anywhere else and figure out anything you need to learn. And so that was one of the main things that helped me get through everything. Because like sometimes you have like the stuff that's super hard. And I mean, I wasn't no straight A student. I had a lot of A's. I had one D. I had one class that I dropped out of, and then the rest was like A, B, and C. But you know, you got to find whatever it is that motivates you to keep pushing through stuff. And to me, it was just seeing stuff to completion.
Okay. When Patrick first told me that everyone in his family went to college, that was like a foreign concept to me. Like to come from a Black family and to say that like everybody in your family went to college, that was really, really big. And so I was picturing like this super queen and king, elite, super rich family, but they're super like down to earth. And Patrick was like, no, like this is, you have the wrong idea about it.
Alcorn is, we probably have 5,000-6,000 students. I ain't gonna say it's in the middle of nowhere because like we made it home. So like that was home for us, but it was 40 minutes to the closest Walmart. Oof. 20 minutes to the closest small town. But like, you know, when you get to Alcorn, it's like family. You got your buildings there, you got your doors, but then it's like surrounded by green and like pastures and stuff, and it's just, I don't know, it's like a little getaway tucked off in the woods, and it's always like home whenever I go. So
and from,
I always walk with Alcorn.
From two people who went to a PWI, talk to us about attending an HBCU and what that was like. How you got into Greek life? Just tell us more.
Yeah. Attending HBCU, so initially I wanted to go to Mississippi State University, like I said. And I ended up at Alcorn. Mississippi State University is a PWI, Alcorn HBCU. And I didn't know anything about that coming up in school. Like, I just thought college, and either you go or you don't. And so I never really got to experience what a PWI was like. So I don't really have like that barometer to compare it by, you know, but I do know that being at HBCU, like it felt like I was at home almost. Like, of course, you got the same BS you're gonna deal with when you at home, like with dealing with Black people. And I mean, but at the same time, it's like a family aspect to it. Like,
yeah,
you get to know your professors, you get to know the staff, and then, like I said, from my family, knowing going to school there, like I had a lot of connections that I was able to use and finesse to get me into positions to capitalize on certain things in my school years. But it was dope. Like, the people you meet, you're gonna meet a whole different host of people than you would expect. Like, oh, you meet everything. You meet everything that you would meet in the real world, you're gonna meet it at HBCU. I mean, you would at PWI as well, but I feel like it's more scattered about, and you kind of got to seek it out at that time.
Yeah.
But at HBCU, it's like, it's all you're surrounded by, so you ain't got no choice but to deal with this person from California, this person from New York, this person from Detroit, this person from wherever. You got all different kinds of black personalities coming together into this melting pot. And so throughout my time with HBCU, so like the first 2 years I played football, that was like an experience in itself, just being on a football team, dealing with football personalities, living a football lifestyle. You're waking up at like 5 a.m.
Oof.
Your first class is at like 9. You have practice from 5 to 7 a.m. You go get breakfast, get ready for class. You get out of class. You come back to practice at like 6 p.m. And you stay there till 10 because you got to watch film to get ready for the week. So football, that was a wild time. Like, you don't really get much time to yourself. So I didn't have time to get a job or anything. So I had to always take out student loans. And that was ultimately the reason I ended up leaving the football teams, because I wasn't on scholarship for it. And so I had to pay for summer school or anything else outside of my tuition for football. I had to pay for it. So I ended up leaving that. And then the year after I stopped playing football is the year that I pledged Alpha Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. And that was a good experience. Like, that was another part of me wanting to see things through to a completion. And I feel like that also transferred into like the job that I do today. So I don't know, just seeing things to completion, that's been like part of my life story. And that's I'm gonna keep it with that.
I like that.
Gotcha. So can you talk to us more about the job that you do today? Mm-hmm. And how did that transition work from going to Alcorn to Dallas? What influenced that decision to move here, and talk about the role that you're in now?
So from Alcorn to Dallas, I took a pit stop in New York. So I was there for like 3 months, and I got to be a kid from Vicksburg, Mississippi, small town, in the big city of dreams, you know what I'm saying, in New York. And so that was a cool experience. But I was there because I was interning with the company that I interned with the same year after I quit football. And if I would have continued to play football, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to be in Dallas to intern for this job during the summer. So like, it all kind of worked out. But I got on with this job through this program that Alcorn had. It was called ZOS. And they partnered with some other college, and you had to pay for classes to learn about the mainframe. And I ain't never heard anything about a mainframe. Like, you see them on TV, and like you hear them in like tech movies and science fiction and stuff. But they offered the class, and they're like, well, we got computer science grads. You can take this class, and we can guarantee you a job after school. And so I was like, well, I'm down. And so I ended up joining in the program. I did that for like a year. You had to take these additional classes on top of your regular class load. And I mean, like, we didn't really take them serious. Like, it was a group of us, and we did enough to get by. But I think one class I failed it, or I didn't make the grade high enough for it to be counted as credit. And so, and at that point, I was like, man, this stuff not even really going to teach me anything I need to know. And I had already interned with the company that I'm working with as well. And I had a connection. Like, once you get your foot in the door of the company, you dang near good, because they'll remember you. And if you make a good impression, you'll have folks that you can reach out to get back in.
Right.
And so at that point, I was like, I don't even really want to do the program anymore. This stuff isn't really working out how I thought it would. Y'all asked for too much of my time, and y'all asked me to pay for stuff. And so I was ready to leave. And I told the dude over the program that I was leaving. And I'll never forget, he was like, we was in a group message full of folks, and he was like, everyone, we're gonna remove Patrick from the group because he doesn't want to proceed with this program. And Patrick, I need you to go ahead and send me back that money that I loaned you so that you can continue with your classes. And like, he tried to put me out in front of the whole group. So I had to take that back to Mons, and we got straight. Like, we got him his money, and we ended up leaving the program. But I still had that that internship opportunity. I still had that connection with the company that I work for now. It shall not be named. Because we got so much red tape there, and if they hear something, they may try to dig up a whole little thing.
Exactly.
But they're a real good company. Like I said, my first job there, I was I wasn't really doing nothing.
Like, everybody's first job.
You 19, 20, however old I was, and I'm interning with these folks. It's like 40, 50 years old, and they're watching screens all day looking at. My first internship, I was actually looking at mainframe stuff. I wasn't looking at it, but the people I was working with were. And so I was just kind of assisting them with that. And then my second year, I was more in like a governance role and trying to help one of our areas in the company bring some of their processes into alignment. And then after that second internship, they brought me on through their pipeline program. And with that, like I said, they sent me up to New York. I was up there for like 3 months. Our developers went to Florida for like 8 months. And our like strictly business people only stayed in New York for a month. And then they were shipped off to like the other locations that they were working in. So that was a good experience. I got to see Wall Street, got to Times Square, like really just be everywhere. Like go to the stock exchange, you know, like it was really cool
getting
to
see the whole thing. Yeah.
And then after that, they sent me out to Dallas. And that was it. I've been working ever since. And then just like that transition from Mississippi to New York to Dallas, like I came out here by myself. Like I have my uncle, but he lives like on the outskirts of Dallas, and I'm not the kind of person to burden people. So I just always got it on my own. But you know, throughout your journey, you're gonna navigate and meet folks that's gonna help you along the way. And so in New York, I met one of my close friends today. And he introduced me to some of his close friends. And then you meet friends, and you meet friends, and you meet mm-hmm. friends. And then before you look up, you got a whole little circle. So that's been my little journey.
Gotcha. I just had a quick question. Mm-hmm. You touched on it. What exactly is a mainframe? I know you said.
Because people know about it.
Yeah. I think people do because that's the world that I'm in every day. Like people talking mainframes and process management and project management and all kinds of stuff, but a mainframe is just a big computer. It doesn't really have like a computer screen on it. It's just a big process computer. It's just there to do work. That's all it is. Like it's not pretty or nothing. It's just there to do work. And that's basically what drive like the cloud, that drive all your, any app that you use in the day, it's some mainframes behind it that's powering it because they process data the fastest for right now. They're trying to get rid of them eventually, but that's all mainframes are. They just big computers with no interface on them.
That's still a little bit over my head. So I'm trying to picture how you can use it or how you can make it function.
So it's like just having engines for a car.
Okay. Like,
if you put the right things into that engine, even though it's not inside of a body of a car, it's still gonna run.
Okay.
And so that's the same thing that mainframe is doing. As long as you're still pumping them with electricity, as long as you're still giving them an input from somewhere, it's still going to run. So you have like a mainframe technologist or something. He'll come in, he'll plug his laptop up to it, put some code into the mainframe, and the mainframe just going to keep on running that code until you tell it to stop or until you download it to another server or some stuff. But that's all. It's just a big computer. It looks like a refrigerator because it got so much processing power
huge.
And storage. Yeah, they big. They super big.
Sounds like something out of a science fiction movie, like you mentioned.
That's exactly what it feels like.
I think I understand it better, though. You said you can plug stuff into it. So that makes sense in my brain now.
Whenever you hear people talk about servers, they just talking about mainframes. That's all.
Oh, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
For the most part. Every server got a mainframe behind it, damn near. Dang near. Excuse me.
Okay, so you've talked to us about a lot of, I don't want to say smart people stuff. I need to get, oh my gosh. Okay. You talked to us a lot about, about some like technical stuff. And people are generally like left-brained or right-brained. But you seem to be both because you dibble and dabble in the arts, but also on the tech side. So when did you start to find your interest in music and in arts?
I feel like that's always been there. And then even the way that I look at work, I look at it the same way that I look at art.
Okay.
So I feel like it's all coming from the same side of the brain. But like with music, music just always been there. It's just always been like, you know, I mean, I feel like everybody say the same little cliche stuff, like music was there when nobody was there, or music the thing that that helped me get the words out when I ain't had the words to say it. So I always rock music like that. And then as far as art, like art followed my family. My mom, she was an artist. And I feel like art don't always come in the same form. So,
right.
You know, like your art may be drawing, your art may be putting words to a beat, your art may be poetry, your art may be shooting a basketball, your art may be hosting a meeting and taking action items afterwards. It's all about like how you manifest that art that you have inside of you, that talent that you got inside of you.
I feel that.
So with the music piece, I know you mentioned that, but where did the media piece come in, the three in, three out? What is that about? What does that mean? And why was it important to have ownership over a brand versus just having one ownership item, a part of art, such as music or photography, wherever the case may be?
So I'm a shout out somebody that I always like looked up to, Nipsey Hussle. I ain't no name dropper, but you know, I just want to shout him out because he said something in like one of his interviews. He was talking about vertical integration, and I never knew what that was, but I looked it up, and it's basically when you see a process and you make sure that you own every part of that process. So if you think about music industry, you think about the artist making music. That's just one part of it. You got to promote that. You got to have someone to make your graphics so that you can promote those graphics. You got to have your merchandise. You got to have someone to make your merchandise for you. You got to have all of these things. And the artist is paying people for that. And I'm like, why would I pay somebody to do something that I can do myself? And that's been kind of my motto with music and everything. So it's like, why would I pay somebody to do it if I can do it myself? And then I realized not only can I do this for myself, I can do this for other people. And so that kind of leads into the creation of a media company behind it. It's like, all right, I had this idea. I know that I can make some money from it. I know there's something that I need. So let me see how I can monetize that and package it up so that I can replicate that package and offer it to as many people as I can to make some money from it. Because at the end of the day, like, we live in a capitalist society, so you gotta have a plan to get some money from the things that you enjoy. And I feel like there was this little chart I was looking at. It's like you got the things that you love to do, the things that make you money, the things that you find peace in doing, and then the things that something. I don't know, but it's like you gotta find whatever aligns across all four of those aspects, and then kind of follow that in your lane. And then the three in, three out, that the whole name, it came from like some fraternity stuff, you know. I feel like with the music game and in the entertainment period, you got to have something that stands out. And like everybody right now is talking about a lot of the same stuff. And it's like, I'm going to bring something to it that can't nobody else say what they're doing. Anybody else say what they got. So three in, three out came from the fraternity. And then it also just means like solidarity. Like if three people go into this, three people going out of it. If we all in it, we all in it. If we all out of it, we all out of it. And that kind of led to that name. And then for the symbol of it, I chose like the, like you go to your emojis and you look for like the little yoga one, like the OM, that's what it's called, but it's like a three. And so I chose that to like symbolize like spirituality, because spirituality is pretty big for me. And just to symbolize that peace, that oneness, that, you know, that stillness. So
with the three in, three out, what all services do you offer? What does that all entail? And what, like, for those that don't know, what exactly is a media company? What do you do?
So the way I look at it, it's another guy that people may not like, but he said something that was kind of, it made an impact on me. Kevin Samuels, he said that, I know, he got a wild reputation, but he said that black men don't have any media production companies to control the way that they're perceived. And so anytime that we see a black man on big screen television, it's through the eyes of a white man, a white woman, or a black woman. And we have Tyler Perry, but his audience is black women, so he got to make things
cater
to black women. So Yeah, I feel like when he said that, it kind of just clicked. Like, I was already doing photography. I was already just, I already had my camera and stuff just playing around with Premiere to try to learn more about videography. And it just clicked. It's like, well, I can do the same thing. I can create a media production company and see if I can do something to change the perception of black men or to change the way that, you know, the world sees certain things and to show the world the way that I see things too. So it just kind of all like came together. Media production company is really like a newer term that I started to use to define it, because that's really what it became after a while. Like at first it's just, I'm taking pictures. I do your logo for you. And then you asked about the services too. So like I said, take your pictures, do logos for you, videos, commercials, graphic design. I mean, anything that you could think that you would need to take a business or a service that you have and get it out to a larger audience, give it a consistent look, make sure that whatever it is that you're selling to somebody, because we're all buyers and sellers, then they has impact. I feel like that's something that I can offer to you.
And I think that's something we found out firsthand. For those that don't know, on our intro track, that's actually Patrick Renardo's song, Amazing. And then also, for all the pictures that have been dropping on Instagram, all the lovely pictures that make us look good, those are also taken by you. So we definitely appreciate that.
Sure.
What is that creative process like for you? So when you when you're holding a camera or you're making a song, whatever the case may be, what's that process like for you, and how do you know when you've had a good product?
For me, it's just all about what looks good or sounds good to me. And of course, you gotta refine what looks and sounds good to you, because when you first start taking pictures, like, oh, this looks great. But then a year later, you look at your work and you're like, man, this wasn't really it. Or you first start making music, like, oh, this song's slapping. A week later, you come back to like, nah, this ain't really it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just all about what sounds good or looks good to you in the moment. And then you couple that with I'm a technical person. I work and live in a technical world. So I'm gonna use a technical term. You use the industry best practices on top of what looks and sounds good to you. So if you know that in the music industry, this is what's hitting right now, and you take that and you combine it with what sounds good to you, and you stand true to yourself, then I feel like it's going to be a hit at the end of the day, because it's something that you enjoy. And it depends on who you're making music for. If you're making music for a broader audience, if you're doing your art for a broader audience, then you kind of subject to how they feel about it. But if you're doing it for yourself, it's however you feel about it. If you feel like it's a hit, it's a hit. If you feel like it's not, it's not.
Facts.
You got to go for it.
And yeah, I don't know if I answered your full question.
yeah, for sure.
So digging deeper into like the music piece. So of course you do everything, but let's talk about the music. So your first project, It's Never Too Late. Your first official like on the market project, I should say. And your newest one, Solstice. Talk to us about those two projects, like the differences between those, like what inspired them.
So It's Never Too Late, that was just me really just saying that I'm gonna put music out, and I don't really care about how it's received. I don't really care about the outcome of it. Like, just YOLO. I'm gonna see what it does. And so those tracks are tracks that I recorded like in my first like year and a half of making music. And like I recorded most of those at the home studio, and I sent them out to my homie in Houston, Rowdy. Shout out Studio Rowdy. That's where we did all the first tape, with Studio Rowdy. And it was just songs about like different parts, like different days in my life, just like different things I'm going through, or different situations that come up, different ways I may be feeling. But like the overall theme of that one was that it's never too late. Like if you want something out of life, go out there and get it. Don't worry about what nobody gonna say, don't worry about what nobody gonna think. Because at the end of the day, you gotta live for you. And you don't want to live no life that's unfulfilled. And then the second one was Solstice. And that was just an EP. And we dropped that one in December. And that one was, I don't know, I took a different approach to it, just because like I feel like I had more experience with dropping music. So I wanted to drop a project that was more of a consistent project, a consistent feel. And it was in December, so I'm like, ain't nobody really trying to ride around to no like hard slapping music mm-hmm. in December. Like, it's gonna be cold outside. People want something to cuddle up to, like some good music just they can listen to it and vibe out. And so that's kind of where that concept for that track came. And then after that, I mean, we got more music on the way. We going to work.
Okay.
Me and Maj, another one of my label mates, one of my homies out here, we gonna drop a, I don't even know what they call it. It ain't a compilation. It's gonna be me and him. Like, we gonna be back and forth on the tracks throughout the tape.
Like Watch the Throne type stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Come on now.
So we gonna do that. And then we just gonna keep it going. Like, the music is fun. So we gonna keep doing it as long as we having fun with it. And when we not having fun, we gonna stop.
We're all music lovers, as you all probably know. And we have a monthly playlist that you can find on our Linktree. And Big Nardo is featured on that playlist along with Maj, who he just mentioned. So go make sure that you check that out and that you download it.
Yeah. Go ahead and check that out, for real.
For sure. You mentioned Maj. Who else is on your label, part of your umbrella overall? Mm-hmm. And what are the different sounds that each person brings?
Yeah. Mm. So you got me. I'm more... like, you hear my voice, heavy voice, southern, college boy, lyricism type stuff. You got Jay, Stay Jamming. I know him as Jay Mack. That's my line brother from school. But Stay Jamming, he's R&B, like real R&B, bringing back that old school 90s R&B type stuff.
Yeah.
And then you got Maj. I met him out here. He's from Chicago. He brings that lyricism as well, and his pen is crazy. It's better than mine. And I feel like I got a good pen, but he be rapping. So it's just us three right now. We may expand, we may not. We gonna keep pushing us three and see how big we can get these, and then see if we add on to it. Oh no, you know what? It's not just us three. We got one more. The General coming through too. So we gonna get a tape from the General next too. So
yes.
We gonna have four on the roster. And I don't know, we're going to keep trying to expand.
So do y'all do like all y'all own production and stuff too? And like, or do y'all also work with other production companies or other producers outside of the camp?
So I'm selfish right now. Like, I want to do everybody's music videos. I want to do everybody's everything. We probably start working with other music video directors just to, you know, get a different eye in. We, right now for production of music, we have a studio that we go to almost exclusively. And then as far as like the actual production of the beats, most of the time we just get those off YouTube. We need to find somebody that can actually make beats for us that we can have in-house. But
right,
we just find them, do whatever we can to get it. How y'all been? Like, how has been this episode, what, 4 or 5 now?
No, your episode...
3? 5? 6? 6.
Five.
Yeah.
5, okay.
Yeah.
So how has been, how do y'all feel like y'all have grown since episode 1?
Oh, we can ask questions. Okay. So before we started recording this episode, we were talking about just the way that we speak, the like comfortability and the confidence when you're speaking, and just with interviewing as a whole and how we're growing with that. Mm-hmm. I told Cedric I'm learning more about me and how I talk to people and interact with people. I feel like I cut people off a lot in conversation. I've said that before in real life. Everyone always is like, no, I don't feel like you do that. But
yeah, you do.
Shut up. You just said I didn't. But it's interesting to hear yourself and to realize just what you do and how you interact with other people. So definitely getting more comfortable. Behind the mic and on recording, and so that's been nice to kind of watch myself grow there.
Yeah, for sure. And to piggyback off what Tia said, originally it's kind of awkward and like kind of uncomfortable because you look at TV, you see people get interviewed all the time, and it looks easy, right? But in essence, it kind of is and kind of isn't, because we have like topics that we want to touch on, want to make sure we get to those, but also want to make sure it flows naturally, so right. Balancing those two. Also, one thing that I didn't realize that would be more difficult than what it is, when people are talking, or at least initially, I was trying to think about what I would say next before they would finish. So just kind of letting it go and then just essentially pivoting the conversation however we want to pivot it based mm-hmm. upon the responses is something that I'm learning and still getting more comfortable with. But definitely from episode one to now, definitely feel more comfortable and just letting it flow. And then T and R are still learning how to play off each other too. Yeah. So all in all, positive experience. And I feel like we have no room to go or nowhere to go but up and to get better.
Come on, man.
So
I still remember like listening in and just hearing the comfortability. So, you know, I see the progression.
Well, thank you.
Sure. Appreciate that.
I was just thinking as we were talking right now, about the Meek Mill Kobe thing. So this may not be a topic anymore in a week or so, like when the episode actually drops. But I've struggled calling you Big Nardo. But Big Nardo, what are your thoughts about Meek Mill's comments? Not comments, his lyrics, referencing Kobe and just rappers in general who do things maybe for shock value, but just because they're unoriginal and put things in their songs that are just wild and OC.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't heard the lyric, he says something, I'm gonna go out with my chopper like Kobe. And it's just unnecessary. Like, do you have to talk about your chopper so badly that you got to bring up Kobe in that?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like he could have chose a different. You could have rhymed with anything else. You didn't have to use Kobe. And as an artist, like, you had a creative control, creative comfortability to do whatever you want to. But when you see the response from it, and you like, okay, even his wife is saying something about it.
Yeah.
Like other people calling it out, and it's like, all right, maybe I overstepped. And, you know, it's like a statute of limitations on everything that go on. It might be too soon for that. We could have just waited. And I don't know. I feel like, but that's the age we're in. Everybody trying to get noticed. Everybody trying to grab as much attention as they can. And so some people do weird stuff for it. And I don't think that this is weird. I think he probably thought it was hot. He probably ain't had nobody in the studio to be like, I don't know about that one. Maybe the folks that was with him thought it was hot too, and he was like, well, shit, I'm just put it out and see what happened. And then that's why it came out like that. And I don't even think it was a full song, it was just like a snippet or something. But I don't know. Maybe he was just testing the waters to see what he could and couldn't get away with. But you gotta know when you do that at that level that there's gonna be a lot to come with it. But I don't know, people doing that nowadays, they gonna put whatever they can in their music to get it heard. And I get it, because whether you like it or not, if you click on it, they finna get it. At least a penny in their pocket.
Mm. Yeah.
But is that what you really want to be known for?
Yeah, I feel that. And, you know, just like lines from like Lil Wayne about Emmett Till and Rick Ross and the Molly and her champagne. So like things like that, like you just said, it's for shock value. They know what they're doing. They have people who are around them who could tell them, you know, oh, this is not okay. But of course, what sells, and what sells is things going viral, people talking about it, conversation. Like they also said that they were, and they probably still are, but like plenty of companies are like targeting black response or black anger. Like they have like the accidental racist comments or the accidental racist images because we're going to talk about it and that's what's going to get them noticed. So just made me think about that.
That's all. That's the game nowadays, is attention.
Yeah.
And we don't, people talk about this, and I don't really know if people talk about it at like a high level or like at a widespread level, but our attention is worth stuff, and we don't even realize how much it's worth. And I don't know. The companies realize how much our attention is worth. That's why they get paid off of it. But we, as the people who's actually giving that attention, the people who are actually giving up this personal information and stuff, we're not seeing any of that. But everybody around us getting paid off of it too.
Yeah.
So it's some stuff there. It's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes with all that.
And I think it is overall just being conscious of that. So a lot of people don't think of it from that perspective, more holistically as far as like the entire process. But I just think that just overall, just being conscious of that can also dictate what you put out.
Mm-hmm.
And like as an artist, like you were saying, like how do you manage what'll get the shock value versus kind of staying true to yourself? Mm. How do you use your pen game, like you said, to get your message across, but also to give the people what they may want or what's hidden right now?
Yeah, good question.
I mean, but that goes back to who your audience is. And I feel like my audience is still, it's me. I know my mom might hear my music. I know my sisters, my grandma, my cousins and stuff might hear my music. So I'm not finna say nothing in my music is outrageous, because that's not the image that I want to portray to my family. Regardless of what happens outside of it, is we ain't talking about anything crazy. And I don't know. I feel like if you eating off music and that's what you do for your day job, then you may have to splurge your life a little bit more just so you can sell those records. But that's not what I do. This is like the same way people the same way people make hand art or do whatever else they do, whatever their thing is. It's mine, so I don't really do it for like to get the shock value or the response from anybody. It's just I just enjoy doing it.
So you talked about doing it for the love. Mm-hmm. What do you love most about what you do? And I'm going to approach that from both the music tip and just your overall career.
Yeah.
And what's been the most challenging part about both aspects?
I say with my career, the thing that I love most is, like I said, seeing things completion. And I'm pretty much a project manager in my role that I'm in. So that's all I do. We get a requirement in, we give it to Dev, get it tested, and then we give it back to the customer. So seeing things go from an idea to a finished product is what I enjoy most about my job. The biggest challenge with my job is translating and needing to speak in a way in which people who aren't from where I'm from would understand me.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, of course you got to do it because we in their system, but I mean, it gets tiring after a while. But I mean, it's a part of the game, and until you get outside of the game, you got to play the game by their rules. Then with the music, the thing I love most of that is it's probably the same thing. Being able to take a beat and hear that, and then my ideas get to flowing, and I can make it into a finished track, and it's something that sounds good and something that I want to listen to, and it's something that other people choose to listen to at times as well. And then just like having that expression. Like I said, I grew up listening to music, so just being able to make my own is just cool to say that I did that.
Yeah.
And probably the most difficult thing with that is like just making sure you stay inspired, making sure that you take time away from it so that you can live life to get inspired, to come back to it and bring something to it, so that you're not just constantly pulling out the same bag of tricks. Like, you go out in the life, learn some new stuff, and then come back to it so you got more to talk about.
What are some of those things that you feel like have, you know, given you inspiration to like write? What are some of the biggest things?
I mean, you know, you get your life situations, you get your new experiences that you may get. Something may happen in the news. You may find a new source of information on the internet, and you may hear another song and get inspired by it, like the way that somebody put together the words, or you may hear just like some random stuff walking down the street, and it's like, dang, I like the way they said that, or it made me think about something a different way. And then when you get into the booth, like, it just comes out a little bit. That's my process for it. Like, I'll play a beat, listen to it, and then whatever's on my mind, it just comes out to match the flow of the beat. So I just use my day-to-day experiences to kind of give me that juice to keep going with it.
Are there any people that you look up to in that space that you see as like a role model, or see like inspiration from, like any artists or any just moguls or anybody that you kind of are molding your process behind?
Yeah, I think Master P would be a big one up there, just for him being able to come from the South and then do his thing with music, get his own label, then say, screw it, I'm finna go play basketball, get into the NBA for a while, leave the NBA, and then come out and still be on top of your game outside of the basketball game, outside of the music game, just being a businessman, whether it's with putting out shoes, putting out the rap snacks, putting out the rap snacks noodles.
Fire, by the way.
The whole thing, man. No Limit Records, like the whole thing. Like, Master P, he got it figured out. And then like, he also got his family taken care of as well. And you could tell that he raised Romeo in a good way. And I don't know his other two kids, but I see him on Instagram often, and it seemed like he's doing a good job with that. Jay-Z, of course, just on the strength, just hearing his story. I didn't really grow up on Jay-Z, so everything that I learned about him has been like in my adult years, but just seeing his grind and knowing where he came from and how he was able to turn that into what he is today, that's pretty dope. I mean, Nipsey was a big influence, of course, just seeing his like grind and really being from where he was from and taking that and taking the people around him and mobilizing them. That's probably like one of the main things that I like to take away from, is just being able to mobilize people around you in the way that he did so that they can all achieve the same goal that you see, and getting those people to see that goal, because not everybody can communicate their goals in a way to make somebody want to follow them or listen to them. I mean, I feel like those are my musical influences, you know? Yeah. I mean, of course, you got influences outside of that, but I feel like this is a standard set of black man influences that everyone else got, you know?
Yeah. I feel like for those three, they both represent kind of the same thing, mm-hmm. just being true to who they are, providing for others around them, and then creating wealth and creating resources that they didn't have for the future generations. Right. So that's something that I feel like is just the people we should strive toward to leave something like a legacy, essentially. What do you see next for you in the next few years for you to be able to continue to build upon your legacy and continue to provide that blueprint that you've already been building upon?
I keep getting money. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it boiled down to. Like, in America, you know if you got a good idea or not by how much money you get from it. So I keep getting money. That means that I'm doing something right. And then I can take that and use that to invest in the people around me. Because I ain't really got that many ideas. Like, it look like I do, just because I do a lot of stuff at one time. But I ain't got that many ideas. But it's a lot of people around me with good ideas. And if I get the money and I have the business acumen to make their ideas become a reality, then we all eating off of it.
Well, so you have heard multiple episodes on our podcast. So you know that we always have a section where we do a segment with our guests to, you know, just have some fun and learn a little bit more about them. But before I let Cedric lead that segment, I have one final question for you. So we're all pretty much the same age range. So Patrick at 26, for a lot of people, this can be a really interesting time. So you're coming out of like being a young adult and like transitioning into the next stage or phase of your life. So what would 26-year-old Patrick have to say to his younger self? It could be some piece of like advice or caution. Just what would you tell to maybe 13-year-old Patrick?
Go out there and get it. Go out there and get it. It's never too late. That's why I named it that, because just whatever you want in life, don't ever think about just because that moment passed, you can't go and get it. So go out there and get it. Make it happen. Ain't nobody else going to make it happen.
Facts. Simple as that.
Simple as that, for real.
Cool. So we'll move into the segment. And these will just be a few quick hitters. First couple things that come to your mind. You mentioned yourself being a former athlete. Any sport, top five athletes, or your favorite athletes of all time?
LeBron James is my number one favorite.
The King?
Yeah, the King. I'm trying to think if there's any football players I want to put in my top. Like
the whole Saints football team?
Yeah, I mean, we'll put the Saints organization as number two.
Okay, who that?
Who that, you know? Michael Jordan, just off the strength of who he is. I didn't get to watch him play because I didn't really start watching basketball until 2015.
Okay.
And so I was late to the party. But just knowing about who he is, what he contributed to the game, he up there. Serena, she up there just because nobody has dominated their sport in the way that she has, male mm-hmm. or female. That don't matter. And then I put my dad up there. He played college football at Alcorn. He should have played for the Saints as well. So, in my top five favorite.
Dope. I forgot to ask you, what position did you play?
I played tight end.
Okay.
On offense and defensive end on defense.
Okay, cool.
Very cool. So, these are quick hitters. So, jumping from sports to music, tell us about your most memorable concert experience.
Mm. So my first concert was with Lupe Fiasco, and that was the first artist that really made me fall in love with music, with like, what was that, Food and Liquor album.
Yeah.
So that was, and I almost wanted to be that way. Like in Mississippi, we ain't had concerts and no stuff like that. But when I saw the Lupe Fiasco was coming out to Dallas, I'm like, yeah, that's gonna be my first concert, because that was the first artist who really made me like music. So that was probably my most memorable. And then the, I don't know, and I went to some more concerts. After the first one, like I just went to go see more concerts after that, but that first one was probably my favorite.
Yeah, Lupe definitely slept on Food and Liquor and The Cool, his first two albums, instant classics. I bumped them both a lot in high school, so I definitely feel that sentiment as well.
That's a fact.
Speaking of concerts. Yeah,
Kick Push, Hip Hop Saved My Life, the whole nine.
All of it. Nothing but his. Mm-hmm. Speaking of concerts, if you're going to have your ideal concert, your ideal lineup, and you're an artist in the lineup as well, you have to pick four other artists. Which artist would you pick to be in a lineup?
At my ideal concert?
Yeah.
At this point in my life?
Yep.
Or like in the future?
At this point in your life.
All right, so.
I know his answers.
All right, you said four other artists?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so I wouldn't be the main artist.
Okay.
I'll be the opening act for the last artist.
Okay.
So, before me, I have Deontay Hitchcock.
Tia put me onto a couple of his songs earlier. It's on the Invited monthly playlist. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he nice.
He nice. He out of Atlanta. I have him before me. And then I would put Akeem Ali before him. And he from Mississippi. And he did the Kimi Casanova.
Yeah.
And so, If I was to have my own little concert, like I want to put people on. If I was to the point to where I had that, you know, that kind of outreach and stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like those are two artists that I like a lot that not a lot of people know of. And then the headliner. I mean, I want to say Lil Durk. She already knew it was gonna be Lil Durk just because he go crazy on everything. Either like him or Drake, just to bring like a real turn up.
Yeah.
That energy. Everybody gonna know about it too. So. Everybody gonna eat.
That sounds nice. Be a nice little smooth concert.
Yeah, it'd be a decent spread for real.
Hey man, we gonna have to make that happen, man. Go ahead, set it up, man. Set it up.
All in due time, for sure.
What are a few things you want to do more of in 2021? Things you may have neglected in the past, or things you just want to put more or focus more on this year?
Yeah, I know for sure I want to go outside more.
Like outside, like
just outside. Period. Like we okay. Outside the apartment because we were pretty much on lockdown all last year. So get back outside, get back to being social. Get I don't know. I feel like last year was just, and it wasn't no, like a year where everybody took off from the things they wanted to do, but it was a year where situations didn't allow you to really pursue everything in the way that you wanted to. So I want to get back to like all of my routine and everything that I had prior to. Corona shutting everything down. Outside of that, like, just more growing, I guess, you know, continue to get better, every aspect of your life. Just keep moving forward. That's really what it's all about. It's all about progression. So I just want to keep progressing.
Yeah. Like Nipsey said, the marathon continues. So,
come on.
I feel that for sure. Who's somebody that you know maybe in your life or a friend of a friend that you think would be a good guest on our podcast, might have a good story, maybe doing something great in the community? Who are some people that may come to mind? And whoever you say, if you know them, you got to plug us.
For sure. I'm going to do that anyway. Let's see. Sale, Homes for Sale. I think he'd be an interesting guest. I don't really know much about his backstory, but I know that he's doing real estate now. I don't know if y'all had anybody on that's talked about real estate.
No, we haven't.
Not yet.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be smooth. If y'all could get like an athlete on here,
that would be interesting. That would be dope. Yeah.
We have some in the pipeline, so. Mm-hmm. Coming up for sure.
And I think y'all need to interview a dancer.
What kind of dancer?
An exotic dancer.
Why?
I was about to say
there's really a business behind all of that, and whether people choose to like respect it or expect it or not. Like, is money being made out there? There's a industry around it. It's a legit business, and they want to get their story out just like we do.
I already knew he started laughing. It was gonna be either dancer, somebody who got an OnlyFans, something. I already knew it was coming. That'll be interesting.
So which one can you plug us? Never mind, I'm just joking.
I'll plug you with all three.
Finna get snatched up, first of all.
They're not stripping for me, I just know them.
Okay. Couple more to round us out. Where can people learn more about you, your businesses, and where can they get in contact with you if they want to have some of your services?
Sure. 3in3out.com. Number 3, IN, number 3, OUT.com. That's a website to get in contact with me or anybody regarding 3N, 3Out Media or 3N, 3Out Records, the label. Outside of that, my Instagram is Big Nardo, ITS Big Nardo. I mean, that's really all I do. I have Instagram and my website. I got a Twitter, but I don't really get on it.
I feel it.
Facebook, I just do that to check in with family. So, Instagram, website, and then I got the email button on my Instagram. I check my email a lot. I feel like an adult when I do that. So,
and we'll of course plug all the socials, and it's on his link tree as well. If you do visit the Instagram, visit the link tree, you will find the YouTube, the, you know, everything, the Apple Music, Spotify, anything.
I didn't even think about that.
Well, exactly.
My music's on Apple Music, my music's on Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube,
all
everywhere. Yeah. All your streaming services, Big Nardo. It's never too late, Big Nardo Sosis. And more on the way, for sure.
There we go.
Perfect. And last question, what advice would you give to someone wanting to journey down the path of entrepreneurship or the path of ownership of their own brand or their own legacy?
Don't be afraid to invest in yourself. And don't ignore how important perception is. Get you a notebook and plan things out. And again, you're going to have to invest in yourself. So whether it's time, money, energy, all that. So just get ready to put it into yourself. But that's the only way you're going to see a result from something. And if you take a shortcut or a cheat code to get around something, you're going to be weaker than you would have been if you would have just went through it to get to that position, and you may not be ready for what's there. So
I like that.
Facts.
Enjoy every step of your journey.
Trust the process.
Fact.
Well, that's another episode of the Invited Podcast. Definitely appreciate you for being on, Patrick, aka Big Nardo, aka It's Big Nardo, 3in3out.com. Definitely appreciate you for joining us. And we loved having you on.
Sure, I appreciate that.
Thank you.